This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. On March 31st, the youth activist group Leaders Igniting Transformation, also known as LIT, submitted a list of demands to the state, city, and county on ways to move the needle on racial justice. They want the state to declare racism a public health emergency, cut all policing from Milwaukee public schools. They also want law enforcement to stop accepting federal surplus of military weapons and invest in schooling, healthcare, and drinking water. LIT also wants to see a racial equity audit in all public institutions. As of recording this, LIT hasn't received an official reply from the government. Lake Effect's Julian Haida recently spoke with one of the letter's authors, Daryl Gibson.
Early this month, Attorney General Bill Barr ordered peaceful demonstrations in front of the White House in D.C. to be dispersed by federal troops. Now, our former governor, Scott Walker, tweeted, "It's hard to imagine any other POTUS having the guts to walk out of the White House like Trump did." Of course, he walked out of the White House because the protests had been violently dismantled and he wanted a photo op in front of a church across the street. Now, Governor Walker, Republican. Meanwhile, Governor Evers, his successor, is a Democrat, and he's ordered more policing in Wisconsin, including invoking the National Guard. So I think some people, perhaps only white people, I don't know, assume that a lot of this unrest boils down to partisanship. Do you think that's the case?
That's actually a great question. And to really break that down, this is not a partisan issue. Let's be very clear. The injustices that happened in this country has happened under Democratic and Republican leadership. This is what it is. It is a racial issue in this country. It's around police brutality. It's around divesting from Black communities. It's around criminalizing a person for their skin color. Unfortunately, it doesn't fall under a Republican's jurisdiction or a Democrat's jurisdiction. So no, it's not a partisan issue. It's a humane issue. It's a society issue. It'd be great that our elected officials would take up the mantle and seem to try to solve this. But, you know, we hold blame in all who are in power and continue to let this happen. Voting is a part of that, right? But this is a systemic white supremacy issue. It goes beyond elected parties or voting or polling locations. I can't go to vote if I am dead in the street from the hands of a police officer or an individual who sees me as a threat because I'm Black. I need to be recognized as a person, as a man, and as an individual as equal to others before my voice can even be recognized. I don't think we're there as a country yet. I think we have an illusion that we're there. But systemically, again, look at where we are and look at how this continuously repeats itself. If we were past racism, if my voice was truly counted, we would not be having this conversation today, would we?
I think you're absolutely correct. You've certainly brought attention through civil disobedience. You have kind of made your voices heard. And what I'm hearing, too, is this is a pressing issue. This is an issue that can't wait, whether it be to November or 4 years. Conversations that we're having now haven't happened since the assassination of Dr. King. So are you hopeful, at the very least, that you are kind of sparking conversations that kind of haven't happened in a long time? Or are you worried that this is all going to just happen again and people are going to continue tokenizing and marginalizing Black voices?
To be honest, I'm numb. I'm numb to hope. I'm numb to optimism. I'm numb to really the future. And what I mean by that is that, unfortunately, I can't read the future. I can't understand the past and historical context and looking at trajectory of this country from when my ancestors landed on this country 400 years ago. What that has taught me is that there are peaks and valleys in the race and a journey to make everyone equal and equitable here in this country. Like you said, civil disobedience is one way of going about it. Other ways is having tragic moments in history cause true change. Right now, we're at a point where the voiceless are in the streets protesting. We have allies here protesting. But again, that's just us saying that need to be heard. What really needs to be happening and what needs to happen are those in power taking those people who are voiceless, who are demoralized, who are criminalized, and hearing them and seeing and causing true systemic long-term change. I don't understand the concept of why people feel this is a matter of which you can hold on and wait to the polls or wait till we have majority in one house or another. Again, why is my life, why is the life of Black women and other Black men in this country always put on hold? Always. We are recognized as one of the most talented, one of the most beautiful, one of the most culture leading ethnicities in this country. But yet when it comes to making sure our life matters, that we are safe, that we are thriving, that we are equal, it's always on the back burner. As Tony Evers rolled out his statement around the defunding the police, he said he doesn't see that happening. And he said the justification is that he sees people who join the police force have good hearts. And in some instance, to the extent, yes, or have good intents, I think was the direct quote or something along those lines. They had good intents to serve the community, right? My question to Tony Evers and to everyone out there is, what do we do with all these bad apples that we keep seeing in our police departments across the country to deter them from being bad apples? There's industries and professions in this country and in this world that you cannot afford to have bad apples in. And it seems that our policing entity is one that is always excused for the bad apples, but there's no repercussions. There's no deterrent for bad apples to exist. And again, it belittles my life to see that in this occasion, bad apples only and might, at the best scenario, lose their job for killing me.
I can't even imagine if, for example, a nuclear power plant operator, you know, notwithstanding the issue of race, but was a bad apple and turned the dials and all of a sudden we have a Chernobyl in Wisconsin. I mean, that's a bad apple situation.
So again, why is it that that's excusable, but this is not excusable? Like, I don't understand the concept. And then that's why the whole fact of systemic white supremacy and racism is so important that we need to address in our government institutions. That's the practice of that, to say my life is not valuable enough to at least review the practices and procedures of our institutions to make sure everyone is equitable, is racist. That's practicing white supremacy. I won't stand for that. Again, it's been days since we sent a letter to Governor Evers, Mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barry, County Executive David Crawley, and no answer, no sit down, no moving forward. What are we waiting for? Why is there no urgency to get and solve this issue? But the first thing that was done was not to have a community conversation, not to put everything on the table and say, hey, let's, how do we get past this? But was to call in the National Guard. That was the first answer to our pain, to our hurt, to our sorrow for generations. That's the first answer. So again, as American, I think I have to have some level of hope to be in society. But as a Black man, and from the actions that I continuously see, no, I don't have hope. I'm lost.
Well, I imagine the other side, not to say there are two sides, feels scared. But that is a kind of a racist kind of feeling, in the sense that it's not about necessarily feeling scared for their personal belongings or their personal well-being, but also for taking responsibility. So it sounds like that is what your organization is trying to get people to do, whether they be in positions of power or if they're benign interactions in the street, are people who, you know, non-Black people, to take responsibility for their complicity in turning their backs on real Black suffering, Black pain, and Black humanity, frankly.
As a society, we all do good when we all do good. And right now, I don't know if anyone, educated or not, can say every person in this country is doing well or is doing good or is treated equally. I don't think, as a society, how can we say we're one of the best cultures and places in the world where everyone is not equal? I'm not even looking to be equal. Let's be equitable. Like, how is that? What fear is that? Fear of correction? Fear of moving forward? I just don't understand the people who try to lay on that, to say, well, I'm fearful. What are you fearful of? That you will be treated just like me? That someone will recognize you as the human being that you are? You're fearful of having that while we live that? While this is our existence?
And I've never heard anything from Black Lives Matter or from Lit, your organization, or from any really serious Black organizing group that would suggest that in any kind of meaningful way to turn the tables. You're asking for basic human rights.
Right. And, you know, it's funny. We, in our history books, we hear about this time called the Civil Rights Movement, right? Where, you know, up to that point, you know, people recognize that it was a horrible time for, you know, African Americans in this country, Black, you know, Black men, Black women, and all the systemic things that occurred to get to that point. And we were taught that after the Civil Rights Movement, it was changed. It's different. We're a post-racial society. We elected President Barack Obama. You know, are we? Were we ever? I don't want to get into a history lesson, but, you know, we have the 94 crime bill. Like,
Bill Clinton.
I can't even put into words how detrimental that was to the African-American community. That was a Democrat, Joe Biden, who's running for president right now, led that. Wisconsin.
And the Democratic Convention is coming to Milwaukee. Do you expect these issues, again, not to talk about, you know, electoral politics, but this will be on people's minds, certainly. How do you get that point across or not? If, for example, the halls of power are coming to our city?
I think that's a very interesting question. And why I say that, it's not on me to get it across. I'm the victim. We're the victims. Why must a victim explain the harm that we've been on if we're victims? That's the whole definition of what a victim is. So again, why are we continuously have to bring to the table and relive all the trauma that we have to get things done? People are witnessing this for their own selves. The same fear people have of seeing what's going on, you're witnessing why this is going on. Don't the rest of the country see what's messed up? Don't our leaders see what's messed up? Don't our leaders understand why our protests are happening? Why people are in the streets? Why people are upset?
Well, it's very easy to get distracted.
So it's easy to get distracted to ignore the life of someone else?
Well, that's our responsibility in the media.
And not just you in the media, but everyone in this country. This is one to uphold. Again, why are we placing the burden on us to also explain and come up with solutions in a place where we didn't come up with the problem? Our existence is the threat. We sent a letter stating, one, the calling of the National Guard into our communities and not addressing the issue was a disrespect and slap to the face. It shows the racism and systematic white supremacy that exists within our current leadership. Secondly, we must start with the five demands that we made. The first being declaring racism as a public health crisis in this state and in this country. That's where we start at. We need to also, what is our number five demand, audit all our government institutions to identify those racist practices. We need to understand that this doesn't happen by accident. Reoccurrences like this, protests that continuously happen generation after generation after generation, don't happen by chance. We need to sit down and review how we operate as a government institution that's here to serve the people, because right now, all the people in this country are being served.
Yeah, now I wanted to bring up something that was also in your statement, in your letter to the county and the state, that this isn't necessarily only about anti-Black police violence, and I really mean Black right now, not people of color necessarily, but, you know, people are invoking George Floyd, police brutality, but there's more structural issues at play here. You know, we've done reporting at UWM on the disproportionality of Black death in the coronavirus pandemic. There's issues with access to clean water. So, you know, when you talk about those kinds of intersecting and related issues that have a de facto racist outcome, how do you see that as in addition to addressing the issue of over-policing of Black neighborhoods?
So I think the best way to put it is, like, let's look at the decisions that have made these conditions. When the virus first was brought to this country, or like became mainstream and folks started to understand it, it was one that was carried from out of the country as folks flew in and were traveling. They brought in and brought in these communities, right? But the automatic rapid growth of coronavirus in Black and brown neighborhoods, why is that? Why was that? Let's look at the environments these communities live in. Let's look at how many hospitals were once in these communities and now closed. How many health facilities? You know, how many clinics? How many doctors? There are so many decisions that are made up to this point of closing, opening, removing places and entities that are needed for thriving communities, and other communities seamlessly have, that create the conditions that which we lead and have to address today. Police brutality is one issue that is fighting and should not be ignored, but let's look at the whole entity of a society and our current society. Healthcare, access to water, education, safety, all those things play part in each other in making sure there's a thriving society. And when one of those things are out of whack or disproportionately focusing on a community, all those other things are impacted.
Well, Daryl, we could talk about this for days, hours, at the very least. But for now, I just wanted to thank you for your time. This is not the last conversation we're going to have about this. And I wanted to thank you for joining us here on Lake Effect.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you for the time and thank you for the platform.
Daryl Gibson is a founding board member, managing director of LIT, Leaders Igniting Transformation. He spoke with Lake Effect's Julian Haida.